Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, July 12th, 2013. Carla L. Reichert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches. Oh, and let's not forget Carla's books. Check out her books. They're really, really worth reading. The Wanderer's Handbook, the Guide to Channeling, Channeler's Handbook, and others. So please be sure and check those out. And the company, the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Hey, how are you?
I just saw that you didn't
get the opening riff. I just sent it again. Did you get it now?
You know, it got sent to Gary accidentally, and he sent it to me, so I did get it.
Oh, so, hallelujah.
We're not a problem. Yeah, he emailed me and said, I think she meant to send this to you, so that's what happened. But we're good. We're good. So I've been having a really, really busy week. How about you guys?
Oh, man. Yes.
Yes?
Go ahead, Jim.
Monday, we kept our appointment with the plastic surgeon, and he took a look at Carla's pressure wound that has a large scab on it. He said, well, if you like, we can get you in tomorrow and debride it. We'll get rid of the scab and clean out that area a little bit. So we went in Tuesday, and Carla had a quick and successful debridement, cleaned all the scab out, and the doctor came into the waiting room afterwards and talked to me. He was very optimistic. He said he thinks maybe in a couple of weeks that we can have another type of a skin graft that'll close so she won't have to favor one side over the other and risk causing another pressure wound. But when we got home and did our first dressing change, we changed the type of dressing we're doing, we discovered that he did a lot of work in there. And
he had told Jim that there might be a little bit of packing involved. So about the third piece of packing that he pulled out, you know, a long piece of gauze, he started going, OMG.
We pulled nine feet of gauze out of her wound.
The gauze in there?
There was 9 feet in there. So what she has, if you take both your fists and put them side by side, the one on the left is an open wound she has now, and it's about an inch deep. The one on the right is also about that deep, except it's covered by the skin graft. And both of them have to be packed twice a day with the gauze that's soaked in Dakin solution, which is simply sterile water and Clorox, actually, bleach. And we're hoping that in a couple of weeks we can actually get it closed up. But for right now, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
And needless to say, it doesn't feel particularly good, so I'm dealing with that. But it's all okay. I mean, you know, the news is radically good.
Well,
previously,
that's good.
Everybody was thinking, well, we're going to have to favor one side over the other, and it's something that I have a terrible time doing because of my arthritis is screaming, you know, when I try to do that. So I've had trouble all along, and now I don't have to worry about that. I can just stay on the bed, which keeps me from having a problem because of the operation, and let my body just work it out. And he feels that the body will work it out, and so do I, Monica. I feel really good about that. The original skin graft was about as big as a dinner plate, and it all healed up except for this piece that apparently is like a cave. Jim has to go spelunking every time he changes.
But, Jim, you're starting up adventure sports at your age.
Yeah, I'm ready to enter competition. I think I'm getting pretty good at this.
Well, thank God. You know,
I didn't know you were the thrill seeker type.
Yeah, right. This is extreme sport in an odd kind of a way. But you know, the lucky thing is that we've never had any problem with infections, and this has been over 2 years. I've had an open wound, no infection.
Wow.
That whole time. And so it's because Jim is so incredibly careful and always uses gloves, always takes the most extreme care of me with bathroom, you know, having to go to the bathroom, which could cause an infection, you know, E. coli. But no, because Jim is so very, very careful with that. And, I mean, I could go on praising him for a long time before I ran out of details, but just the short form is, I am feeling really wonderful for the first time in 2 years. I'm feeling that I can do
this.
That's
great.
I can heal. And this is something that I think maybe the surgeon needed to get to know me and my problems well enough to assess and figure out how he could help me the best way. And so it's just all been good, and it's all been for the good. And I just thank the Lord, and I thank everybody that's prayed for me. It's just been such a trip, feeling that pressure from the love and the prayers and the loving thoughts of all the people that have known that I'm going through this. And, you know, from wherever they find out about it, you know, our websites or this radio show or Winfrey's radio show, they're all praying, and it's just an incredible force for the good. And I feel Spirit moving within me and really helping, and it's just a wonderful thing to go through. And I'm looking forward, not too long from now, I think my back will finally be closed up. I'm
well,
a dancer, I'm a happy dance.
And this will all have been put behind her.
As it were.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Okay, we're going to move on.
I don't suppose it's precisely right to ask how your week was, since we've been raving, you know, but anything you want to share?
No, just busy. Just I've got several projects going on right now, and it's all good. They're good projects. It's just, you know, it's just
okay,
all of
well,
a sudden.
I hope
my...
it all works out for you.
Yeah, it's all real positive. Just, you know, just have a lot more going on than usual, so I've been, like, running like crazy. But it's good,
boy.
Definitely a good thing. Okay, the opening riff for tonight is from Kuo, the Aaron Kuo Dialogues, Weekend 1, Session 5, page 107. The entire body, when facing the catalyst of pain, reacts quite literally in defense by tensing against a danger. Thus, it is very, very healing to work continually with patients at the unending task of relaxing that creature of mind, which is the body, and especially with allowing the breath to flow into the heart womb, bringing its gentleness and its healing to dissolve tension, and breathing out all that tension in deep, spontaneous breathing, not to attempt to breathe deeper than usual, but simply to breathe in visualized love, nurturing light and spaciousness in which the self may relax. In the case of a solidified pain due to illness, there are many, many layers of tension and tightness, Thus, it is not enough to do this exercise once or periodically, but rather to honor the self by paying the coin of attention and mindfulness that it deserves. Attend to the state of the tenseness of the body, and whenever it is perceived, in whatever company or circumstance, allow the mind to do its visualization of softening that heart womb of fullness and allowing that fullness to give out of fullness into fullness at the cellular level for all the body. Thus, the feedback of body to mind becomes that which the mind cannot create, that is, mercy and merciful forgiveness.
Thank you, Monica. There is nothing that has the same power as forgiveness. When it ceases being a word and becomes an energy, its power to cleanse our physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual bodies and fill them with the energy of sunlight, the smell of roses. It is so strong to have that forgiveness flowing through us. And by imagining it at the cellular level, at the level of furthest, fullest depth, there is a radiance to that healing that is like nothing else. I don't think it matters what company you're in or what you need to attend to as far as the communication you're involved with, because the word forgive is so powerful all by itself. And if you could breathe, not powerfully, but just easily, comfortably, slowly in, there is a continuing connection with the infinite creator that is incredibly powerful to help you for the good of all of those bodies that you have, those bodies of each chakra, the chakra of the root chakra that heals energies of forgiving the body for its very being and for its sexuality, of forgiving any issues that you may have with yourself, liking yourself, having a connection with yourself in any way about which you question your worth, or if there is an issue you have with another person, a personal relationship. If you can breathe forgiveness, you don't have to solve the problem in order to forgive the person. Forgive, forgive, forgive. And when you breathe that energy into the body, thinking about the issues you have with your birth family, with your marriage family, with your children, with your job, it's so healing. Forgive and breathe and forgive. and breathe. You can't go wrong. There's no way to mess this up. If you lose the connection, breathe again. There is an unending flow, like the flow of the ocean as it beats upon the shoreline. And its very beating is love and forgiveness. Love and forgiveness. And as it flows out, it takes all of those difficulties that you have and flings them out to sea. All is well. All is well. All is well. Sometimes it's hard to get that connection going because there's something in you that doesn't want to forgive. And that too is okay because that's what you're feeling. And if you're feeling that, that's all right. But offer it to your body. Here comes the tide. Love. Forgive. Breathe in. Breathe out that issue. And see how far you can forgive. A little bit. Halfway. All the way, just as an experiment. Once you get into that flow and you're feeling that energy, feeling that flow, it's almost irresistible, and it catches you up, and it serves you so well. There have been so many times in my life that I have thought that the worst problems that I had were the problems of my physical body. When I'm going through the results of an operation, as I am right now, and having to deal with post-operation pain and stress, it's easy for me to think that the most stress that I am having is the stress of the body. But, oh, my beloved sisters and brothers of the open heart, that is not so. It is never so. The deepest pain comes always from those pains of relationship with yourself or with others in which you know that either you or someone else cannot forgive you. And there is a wound into that womb of the heart. Oh, how that pains me when it happens. It happened to me today. And I have been breathing in and out. I have been so grateful that this couple paragraphs of words was just in front of me today. Because I have worked without stopping whenever I was at all awake in breathing in the love and the forgiveness of the infinite creator and breathing out all of the tenseness and the solidity of that pain when you can't forgive yourself. In this case, I did something I don't even remember, but I did it. I said something thoughtlessly, probably as a joke. I don't even remember it. I would never have said it meaning it. And I just found out that that has pained my beloved friend. Oh, how I love my friend. And yet I would never ask her to be with me with that pain between us. I would not want her to feel that sickness that comes when there is something between two people. And so I immediately wrote her and gave her permission to leave my presence until she's okay, until she can forgive me. Now, she immediately wrote back and said, it's very possible that my letter to her has solved the problem. But I will not stop breathing in the love and the light of the one infinite creator, and breathing out that part of myself that has solidified over a mistake. It does not do to keep something to yourself and not forgive yourself. It's just as important for me to forgive myself as it is to forgive the other person. How wonderful it is that she was not so solidified in her pain that she could not see the possibility of coming back into harmony with me and trusting me once again. Oh, how thankful I am. You know how important trust is? Have you ever thought about that? Do you trust yourself? I think that's what it comes down to. When you trust yourself, I think it becomes possible for you to stand with someone else's judgment upon you and say, I have no idea that I said that, and yet I totally forgive you if you need to be away from me, because I want you to feel comfortable much more than I want you to be close. I think giving her permission, because I do trust myself, was a very important part of things. Breathe. Breath is so powerful. Every cell in your body needs that breath. It doesn't have to be, you know, tight and sudden. It can be. There are Buddhist exercises that are, you know, very quick and very sudden. But it's not necessary in order to breathe in the love and breathe out all tension. Breathe in, forgiveness. Breathe out, forgiveness. Oh, how precious it is. How very, very precious to be able to heal yourself by simply breathing and loving and allowing the self to forgive. I think if we could look at one aspect of the Law of One that is healing, perhaps more than any other, it would be that concept that we are all love, and that love flows through us constantly in infinite supply. We can breathe in the light and breathe out all that which is tired and worn. Breathe in the love and breathe out all that which is not loving and not forgiving. Breathe in beauty and breathe out ugliness. I thank the one is creator for this gift of love. I love you all so much. It's such a privilege to speak with you this evening. I hope you feel that love now and always.
Carla, here's a question. What about people who have a difficult time breathing? What do you think is the significance of that? I mean, they may have the intention to do all these things that you just said, but they have a physical inability to get that deep breath.
Well, that's a good point. And I think that it needs to be realized that when you cannot take a literal deep breath, you can take the most breath that you can and still get enough. Because if something is infinite, then it doesn't matter how much of it you get. You're getting enough and more than enough.
Because a lot of these exercises for healing and forgiveness do involve, you know, the deep breathing. And back when I was sick, I couldn't do it. You know, I mean, I'm fine now, but when I started drinking the water, the breathing cleared up. But what's that?
When Jim was a kid, he had asthma also and had the same problem.
Yeah, I was thinking of asthmatics as well. So, you know, I had a different type of breathing problem, but, you know, it's cleared up now, like I said. But for years, you know, there was all these exercises to do, and it was so frustrating to not be able to get that deep breath. So I was just wondering.
Yeah. One time I took, what was that medicine, Jim, that was so bad for me?
Baclofen.
It had a horrible effect on me. First of all, it took me out of my right mind. I didn't know what day it was or what week it was. I couldn't say the Lord's Prayer, and we've said the Lord's Prayer, you know, two times a day for 40 years and more together, and I couldn't remember the words. I was shot, and then it went into my breathing, and I had to work as hard as I could for every breath. I was fighting for my life. I have no idea what would have happened if it had been any more serious, because until that medicine came back out of the body and it wore itself out, I was fighting for my very life. And golly, that's scary. So I think that it's got to be the hardest thing to relax into something that is so incredibly difficult as, you know, having difficulty breathing. I do believe that it's possible to maintain your physical discipline and affirm that it's enough, that you're getting enough to do this work. But that's hard. It's just so hard. It certainly is. That's a very good point, Monica.
Well, I just know people with asthma, and for a while when I had that problem as well, it was just, you know, it was very scary. And I'm just wondering what the significance of it might be. Like, what is the lesson here, you know, to want to be able to forgive and to take a deep breath and do all these things and not be able to. And I never did really figure that out, you know. I mean, I finally got it cleared up, but I just never did, you know, during that time, never did figure out, you know, what was the catalyst for that, you know.
Yeah. If you think about it, the will is involved in breathing a lot. It's very close to the heart. It's in between, sort of in between the heart and the will in its, you know, its presence. you know, where the heart is, you know, where the lungs are. They're sort of on top of each other. So it covers both aspects, and it covers, you know, times when you're having problems forgiving yourself, I think. I think that, and times when you're brokenhearted, when you just feel that you've lost something that you need to survive. I could remember when my beloved companion Don died. I felt as if I was going to die. I didn't, and that puzzled me a lot because I was so sure that it was going to happen. But it didn't. It just was painful to take each and every breath. It was painful to be myself because I couldn't stop thinking about all of his suffering before he died. And it broke my heart again, anew, every single day for years. And I know I'm not alone in this. And people say, who haven't had that experience, oh, that's impossible. You can't possibly feel that intensely about something for so long. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. If you love and you've lost that companion, it is an always ever-renewing fountain of sorrow and grief. And I think Joan Baez said it beautifully once when she wrote about Bob Dylan and said that he had a fountain of sorrow. And that's what inspired a lot of his writing, that fountain of sorrow that was ever coming new and ever, you know, causing him to write about that sorrow. That really touched me, those words. I think a broken heart is one of the hardest physical illnesses to get over. And it may not seem as though it's physical, but, oh, it is. It is. It really is.
I think you nailed it. When inability to forgive oneself or maybe not even feeling worthy of being alive, maybe not feeling like continuing this lifetime, things like that. Those are probably all themes that people with breathing difficulties probably have some sort of issues along those lines.
I were guilty. Like I should have known how somehow to do something to save him. And in that, I obviously had not been able to do that. I was guilty, and the penalty was death. And somebody, somehow, should have taken care of that, you know? I wanted them to badly. I couldn't commit suicide because it was perfectly obvious that it was so painful for everybody around Don. I wasn't going to do it and make it even worse. But I wished a lot that somebody would, that somehow the energies of everything. And I came very close to dying several times in the late 80s as I worked through every issue that I had, whether it was anger. I found that I was very angry with him for leaving me alone.
Ah, that's,
you know,
understandable.
And I was grieving because there was nobody like him in my life. And this says nothing about Jim. There's just nobody like him. you know, all those different aspects of grief that people write about. Well, if you experience them, it seems to hit you all at once. And it takes a long time to forgive yourself. You can forgive the person that's in relationship with you for quite a while before you can forgive yourself. The person that you have the most trouble forgiving, I think, is the self. It's amazing
that, sure.
that we go through this kind of thing. I always thought it was amazing that we go through this and we live and we survive to see another day. And it is possible because at the time when you're in it, it seems impossible. You know, you just can't do it. You cannot do this. And eventually, if you're tough, you do it. And thank God for that.
There were many things that helped me when I was going through that, and I think you really did nail it there. It had a lot to do with grief in my life, in my case. And there were many things that I did, you know, along the way that helped. But one of the things that really helped on an emotional level was homeopathy. And I'm not talking about the over-the-counter stuff you can get at the health food store for colds and flu. I'm talking about constitutional remedies that can only be administered by a practitioner. And I'd like to throw out a recommendation for anyone who's dealing with grief or any kind of psychological, emotional issues that they're having a difficult time with. And of course, there's many different techniques and you know, various things you can do, obviously. But homeopathy works on many levels. It works physically, emotionally, and, you know, it works on the psyche. And there's a book I want to recommend. It's called Homeopathic Psychology, Personality Profiles of the Major Constitutional Remedies by Dr. Philip M. Bailey. That's Homeopathic Psychology by Dr. Philip M. Bailey. You can get the book on Amazon.com and read it cover to cover and find yourself in that book, because most people will fall into one of those categories and you'll find several different remedies that are close, and it'll be difficult to decide, well, is it this one or this one or this one, you know, but there's going to be very subtle differences, and it's kind of an art to determine, you know, which one it is. But that's where the practitioner can come in. But if you read the book first and then go to a practitioner, then you'll be able to have a more intelligent conversation, and you can even suggest remedies, because a practitioner is not going to know the person that quickly.
Well, that's very true, Monica. And one thing about homeopathy that is very powerful to know is that you can't hurt yourself. The most that you
right.
can do is make a mistake and not hit the mark. Whereas if you made a direct hit, it would take a shorter time to heal different issues. It would take a longer time if you made a mistake, but it's not going to kill you. Some of these strong medications that normal doctors, the American Medical Association type doctors give, have so many side effects that it's amazing anybody ever really takes them, you know, because they're doggone dangerous. And, you know, they may ease pain or help you to breathe or this or that. But on the other hand, they may ruin your kidneys or give you a heart attack or, you know, I mean, you can hear on the ads for these things on the TV or the radio that they're forced by law now to give the side effects, and the side effects are scary. So one thing about homeopathy and alternative medicine in general is that whatever is going on, whether you're working with various, vitamins and minerals, or whether you're working with homeopathic or whatever, you can't hurt yourself. It's not going to do you any harm to take the stuff, which is really good.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. So many of the pharmaceuticals, my God, the side effects. Oh, coma, sudden death. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, people do this stuff. And I saw some videos on YouTube done by some parents of teenagers whose teenagers had committed suicide while on antidepressants. And they had just some, you know, some minor depression, some teenage angst. And then they got on the antidepressants, and all of a sudden they were suicidal. And it came on very suddenly. And there's actually an organization, I don't know what it's called, but if anybody's in that situation, they can do a little research and find it, because, you know, I don't remember. But there's an organization of mothers that had gotten together because they had lost their kids, and they believed that it was triggered by the antidepressants. So those are some heavy-duty drugs. I mean, you know, what's the point?
These are the things that we can figure out. But, you know, since we're actually a show that is trying to talk about love being the healer. I think what you have to come back to is that these homeopathic or other drugs that are alternative to the medical drugs have various aspects of love in them, that they are made with loving hands, that they have the love of the infinite creator is acknowledged and used in the remedies suggested. So that, you know, I mean, Ra, and there are many practitioners that believe, as do those of Ra, that love is the greatest healer. Christian Science is probably the strongest practitioner of that. The Christian Science practitioner will work with that person by affirming that the thing that seems to be harming that person is actually not there. It's an illusion. It is not actually there, and that what is there is their perfect self. And that they affirm that and affirm that and affirm that, and gradually are able to strip away the aspects that are killing that person or causing that person to have a problem. So love is the great healer, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. Oh, and I just got to make a comment. You mentioned Christian Science. Not to get into a whole big discussion about that, because that's, I'm sure, another topic in itself. And as with all religions, there's, you know, good qualities about the this religion, as well as maybe some not so good. But I knew somebody that was a Christian Scientist, and from what I understood, there was a whole lot of value in seeing the positive and believing in the power of the mind to heal. But at the same time, one of the things I noticed about it was it seemed to completely disregard the benefit of catalyst. It was like, well, if somebody's sick, they were told, well, just ignore the sickness. You're well. You know, the sickness is a lie, and the truth is that you're perfect and you're healthy. And I was thinking, you know, that's kind of disregarding the purpose of the catalyst in the first place. You know, obviously everything's a catalyst, and if the sickness was there, it was to teach the person something, right? You know, to go through that experience, and when we deal with the catalyst and we've learned whatever we're supposed to learn from it, then the catalyst is dissolved because we don't need it anymore. But they seem to just, you know, they're in denial about even having any catalyst or any value to the catalyst whatsoever. Do you have any comments on that, or have you?
Like you said, you could talk forever about the difficulties with various alternative sources of treating illness, but I think that the point is that there are non-AMA ways of dealing with this which profoundly encourage love and lift up on the scariness and the reality, the big solidity of that which is hurting the person. And, you know, the attitude, it gets out of hand a lot, I'm sure, but the basic point is, I think, a valuable one to hold, and that is that you can help yourself simply by changing your attitude.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you, Carla. Oh, Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Maybe one little comment I'll venture forth. When you look at both the Eastern and Western philosophies and religions in general, each looks at both the interior world and the exterior world in a different way. The crucial rejection of the Eastern religion is that the outer world, the catalyst we're talking about, has no value, and the inner world has all the value. And in the West, we tend to reverse it. We tend to reject the inner world and look at the outer world. And I think if we're really going to use our catalyst successfully, we have to be able to realize that this is an illusion in which we live, but it is an illusion with a purpose, and it can help us get where we're going. It's not a mistake. It's also part of the Creator. And the inner world does have a great deal of value. It's not just what we accumulate that has, you know, it's not a monopoly game we're playing. You know, the richest person doesn't win at the end of the life. So I think, you know, what we're doing in the metaphysical or spiritual journey is seeing the value of both the inner and the outer worlds, and using the catalyst of every day, as we've been talking about, to find our way back home to the higher realms.
Well said. Excellent. Very well said. Okay, that leads us to our question, first question, actually. This is from Sharon. Sharon, do people find the Law of One, or does it find them? Why had I never heard of it until age 44? I've heard of many various religions and New Age paths, Edgar Cayce and other channelers, etc., yet never heard of the Law of One. I know the Law of One isn't a religion, but still, why had I never heard of it? This is from Sharon.
Well, the way that we've always thought about it is that it's one of those things that comes to you when you're ready for it. And so we can only trust that that's true. Now, we've been trying for, well, ever since 1980 when Jim joined the group and we formed a L&L Research and determined that our purpose was to make this available, make this information that we had been receiving through channeling available to everybody globally for free, to the best of our ability. And so we put up a website with the help of incredibly generous people that gave of their time and their talent and their money. It's a mutual collaboration of many people who have different gifts. And so we now have two websites. One is for the material itself, and that is the archive website, llresearch.org. And it has all of our channelings, all of the books that I've written and that Don and I have written together. All the channelings that I've done that are, you know, not just sessions, but various things like the channelings from the Holy Spirit and so forth, different things that I have done. We quoted from a book called the Aaron Kuo Dialogues, and that was an attempt to have a co-channeling with someone whose source was very, very different from ours. It was a Hindu master that was Barbara's inner god. And here I am with an extraterrestrial source. And it's not my inner god or anything. It's just I was able to pick up this information because my vibration was able to vibrate, you know, in perfect harmony with that vibration. Thank God for that. But it's a whole different thing. And we found, as we hoped to find, that all positive information harmonizes. It was a really beautiful collaboration. And, you know, it's worth reading because of that. But not to get off the point, what I'm trying to say is gradually, as we accumulated more material and as we got more and more people that were typing it up and publishing it and, you know, posting it to our site, and more people came to translate books into different, I don't even know how many languages our books are offered in now. There's French and German and Italian and Polish and on and on. And it's a wonderful thing to see. Oh, Chinese, that's a big one. Anyway, all of these things, you know, that site has gotten bigger and bigger so that people come to the site and there's no money involved. We are able, now, there's money involved in that we have to pay our bills. So we always are asking for money. Every year we run a, what would you call it, Jim? Fundraising. So that people can give us some money to help with our bills, which, you know, as more and more people have needed to use our site, there's been more and more money involved because we have to get a bigger Server, I think they're called, so that more and more people can open our sites without it being, you know, we got to the point where nobody could get onto the site sometimes because everybody was trying at once and nobody, you know, nobody could actually get on. So we keep having to make things bigger and bigger. And so that, you know, there's money out for that. And then we've discovered from the information that a lot of our listeners are wanderers, those who have come from elsewhere in order to help at this crucial time in the planet's changing of vibrations into fourth density. And so they are, you know, they share this aspect of not being able to find anybody to talk to. And so we found ourselves creating a website that was a community website so that people could talk to each other about the different things that they wanted to have available to talk about. And the person would be understanding and would be loving and would not just say, well, that's ridiculous, you know, where's your mind? Which is what often happens at home and at work, you know, with the people that you talk to. You just don't have anybody that's compliments what you're interested in. It's tough, you know, so we do more and more as time goes on, and this radio thing that Monica has volunteered to do is another way of reaching people and letting them know. So we're trying to open ourselves to more and more ways to be of service and have people discover us. But we have to hope and pray that it's the kind of information that will fall down and hit you some way, you know, when you're ready for it. And the reason that we hope this and, you know, feel fairly sound in it is that has happened so often. People tell stories so often of running across the material in the oddest ways, literally having it fall down from an upper shelf in a bookstore and having it hit them on the head. When Barbara was looking for a book on channeling, she, the gal that I co-channeled with in the Aaron Kuo dialogues, she was looking hard but not being able to find anything in a bookstore, so she went up to the lady at the front desk and asked for her help, and then happened to notice that there was a book lying there that was called A Channeling Handbook. I had written it, and Barbara said, oh, well, this looks like it's right on subject. Can I buy this? And the lady was stunned. She had, you know, she'd never seen it. The store didn't carry it. She didn't know where it came from. But it was time for Barbara to get that book. So there it was. And stories like this happen a lot, all the time. And it's a wonderful thing to see. So I think basically we're trying all we can is number one. And number two, we have to believe that there's some magic involved, and people who need this work and are ready to hear this work will get it.
The Chinese have a saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yes.
So.
There you go. Mickey?
All right.
I felt you thinking. I felt the pressure of your thoughts there.
How did that feel?
There was pressure.
Was there? Well, no, I really don't have anything to say there. I just agree with everything you say. When people are ready for the material, it usually shows up. I mean, I think that people need to value whatever material they've got in front of them now that they've been, you know, seeking for however long they've been seeking, and what they've got, they're studying. Look at that and take from it what has value for you. You know what has value. I mean, the things that stick with you have value for you, and then, you know, keep looking, and other material and other people and other experiences will come your way. Your life will become a journey of stepping along the way, and sometimes you find material or parts of material that will stay with you for your entire life, and that's always great to have a friend like that, a friend of that type of information. But, you know, it may be that you move through various books and philosophies and experiences, and it's all part of what you're doing and seeking and what you are.
Okay, we got time for one last question. Hopefully, I'm thinking this might be a kind of a quick question, but if not, we can continue on to next week. And if anybody's listening live and we are still talking at the top of the hour, you can hear the rest of the show in the archive. You know, in about 20 minutes after the show's over, the show will be posted at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. And the question is, last week, Jim, you mentioned that the Egyptians saw Ra in their skies, but Ra didn't actually land until 5,000 years later. Did they land in ships? And then the second part of the question is, since Ra did say, you know, tell us that they built the pyramids, what about all these other pyramids all over the world? They're finding pyramids everywhere. I mean, there's like pyramids all over the place that they're finding, you know, in the bottom of the ocean and in China and all kinds of places. Did Ra build those too?
First of all, we really don't know if they landed in ships or if they appeared or how they got here, how they were first noticed. We didn't get into the details of questioning Ra as to how that all happened. I would imagine that anything was possible because when they were in the skies 11,000 years ago, they said that the Egyptians could see them because for the Egyptians at that time, their philosophy of life was that they lived in a universe of many wonders, of infinite wonders. And so to see a craft in the sky was just as wonderful and amazing as it was to live their life and to see the animals that went upon the planet and the stars in the sky and weather and so forth. So it really didn't matter, so they allowed visibility. So I would imagine that it would be very possible for them to have landed in craft. As to the pyramids, Ra, of course, is responsible for those in Egypt, but there were other sixth-density entities that had discovered the efficacy of the pyramid in channeling or funneling energy. And some of those were in South America, some were in Tibet. I think Ra mentioned that around the planet itself, there are at least 52 or 3 what they call balancing pyramids. And I really don't know if Ra had anything to do with building them, but we see in the Mayan culture in Mexico a different type of pyramid. It's a step type of pyramid that uses larger stones. It's not the same, you know, size, but in general, the pyramid had a value to those who were seeking higher truths, and that it took the intelligent energy that is everywhere and funneled it or channeled it in a spiraling fashion so that it could be used for learning and for healing and even for transportation, for moving throughout the universe. So what was the other part? Another part of the question there?
Just was responsible for the others, and the answer is probably there were other entities that were responsible for some of them. We'll have to get into that more and tell you more about what Ross said next week.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much, Carl and Jim. As always, it's an honor to be talking to you every week. I really appreciate it. I always learn something. I'm sure everyone else that's listening also learns a lot, too. So thank you very much. You have a great week. And want to let everybody know that you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Please check out llresearch.org, which is the archive website. It's got the Law of One material, channeling transcripts, publications, and lots more. And the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. And that's where you can post questions for the show. We are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. So we'll see you next week.